You're listening to Around Comics, episode 158.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the Comic Book Roundtable. I'm Christopher Niesman.
I'm Tom Caters. Whoa, did we switch it around?
No, I guess. Yeah, I thought we were going to not do that anymore.
We're not going
to. Oh, we made that decision while you weren't here.
Yeah, that's right.
That we hated.
Did
you
know
I
miss
why?
The
because
demo?
It's really uncomfortable
introducing
ourselves.
That's it. Let's just leave it.
Yeah.
They can figure out who everyone else is.
Scotty and Sal are here as well.
I'm motherfucking Hank. Hank is in the house.
Hank is getting a little fat. Dude,
Hank got his braces off and he's all fucking
he's
chipper
now.
He's on
his
cell phone talking about lots
money
of money.
And
he waved you off. You were like talking to him on the phone. He, gave
he
the
said,
letter.
I got calls.
And then
I
all of a sudden he leans over and he's like, yeah, it's going to be $150.
Yeah, he did. And that's no shit. He was like, yeah, $150. I'm like, you're a kid. Kids don't have $150.
You can't even count to $150.
Yeah. These days they do. Like a kid the other day. I stepped on his shoes on the train, and he yelled
shot
at me.
You.
Yeah, no, he yelled at me. He shot at me in, once in the air on the train, which was obnoxious. And then he said I could buy you 10 times over and threw a $100 bill at me.
Damn.
Yeah.
Then you said, watch out, because I will audit you.
I will audit you. Are you declaring all that money you have, kids?
Yeah, kid.
Hank.
And he laughs in your face because he's a minor and he doesn't have to declare anything.
No, it's true.
Son of a...
Wow. Parents laundering their money through their children.
That's what it is.
I gotta get my kids in the game.
Oh, hey, it's good to have a kid. Nice.
Now,
little Jack-Jack, put this underneath your pillow.
Daddy, why do I have so many green dollars under my bello pillow?
Never, ever touch them.
Don't ask me about my business, kids.
Don't ask me. Now, if you see a cop come by, just go... Hey, three times really loud. Then run home as quick as possible.
I would never
whatever.
Do that kind
that's
of
good,
thing.
It's good to have the band back together, guys. It's been the first time in a while.
Yeah.
Since the last club show.
You slackers keep taking weeks off. Me and Scotty are the only ones holding up.
Give it a pound.
Guys got, we had to
form of loneliness. Shape of nothing to do.
No social life.
I'm out of here.
Fuck this. Let's go. Take my laptop.
Scotty's gonna go roll with Hank.
Yes.
Come on, Hank. Let's go do some.
I don't know if you
let's
have
to burn up
roll.
Some.
Let's do some math.
Yeah, I don't have enough money to roll with Hank.
Come on, Hank. Let's go burn up some Franklins.
I told Hank I bought a PS3. He's like, I have four of them.
He hasn't even Gold. Opened any of them.
One for each room.
Hank actually said he has a PS4.
Oh,
hey, oh
he developed
damn.
It.
He modded his with a gold grill.
Well, this is the long-awaited and I guess a week delayed because I took a little trip with Pops last week. But this is our club episode.
Club.
The club.
The club. And this is where we're going to talk about three selections from the last month, a CD, a DVD, and a trade paperback. And we'll get into all those in just a moment. But it is a great time to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, Point Blank, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $9.72. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need.
That was like a radio mode. It's a huge selection.
Gigantic.
All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
I love hot chocolate.
You're
we found
love
that out.
That
yeah.
It's a good hot chocolate.
I'm
going to send Braceless Hank to get me more hot chocolate later.
I think I might have you get me one.
When I was ordering it, she asked me, do you want whipped cream on that? I was like, if you don't put it on there, he's going to send me
he's
back.
He's going to be mad.
And then she said, ooh, who is it? And he said, Scotty Young. And she said, oh, my God. And she put it on her tits.
Yes, because I'm sure she reads a lot of comics.
My name reaches deep, baby.
I am a married man, but she could have pulled it off.
Is she hot?
Oh,
she was... Why do you think I go get coffee every Friday?
Ooh, I'm telling. I'll tell you.
I got my copy from an old Indian man.
Well, before we get
there's
on
nothing to, funny about that. I mean, it's just like, the truth. Okay.
You're not the only one.
Scotty's on his phone.
Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7, 7.30, 8 o'clock, something like that, at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It is located in beautiful Lincoln Square on the north side of Chicago at 4835 Northwestern Avenue. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you're Hank, you can sort of just, you know,
have
roll
your
up
chauffeur
in your,
drop
yeah,
you off.
Drop you off, get carried in. Your bodyguards.
I'm sorry.
I was waiting for you. Whatever you were going to do.
I keep coughing. I've been sick. Scotty got me sick last week. I've been sick all week.
Weird. How did Scotty get you
what's
sick?
What's so weird about it?
Because I put tongues in mouths.
You got the creeping crud.
The blicket.
I've had exchange of fluids.
Been coughing a lot lately.
Great. So two out of the four of us have rickets now.
So if I cough on the mic, I apologize. Ahead of time, but I can't help myself.
All right, guys, if you aren't familiar with what the club is, once a month, one of the panel members picks a CD, a DVD, and a trade paperback for everyone else to read, watch, and listen to, and then at the end of the month, we get together and talk about that and apparently talk about how much we did not like that person's selection.
Oh, don't get all goddamn.
There's strengths and weaknesses.
Already crying.
Sure. No. I'm totally open, and I think Scotty led us off with a good triad of picks. Is that a am I using the word correctly?
Sure.
He had a good trio of
triumvirate
picks.
Of.
A good tri-la-blah.
But I think one of the things that you set out right off the bat was that, you know, not everyone is gonna love or hate these.
Yeah,
but I wanna pick things that are going to encourage conversation.
Yeah. And we pick things that we genuinely like.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless if it's supposed to be good or not good.
Right.
Or whatever. We just pick whatever
what
we really like.
What we enjoy.
It's kind of like our chance to really step outside of the top tens of whatever medium and
right.
just say, hey, this is what I like.
I dig it.
Yeah. And
is it weird then that I'm picking Titanic as my movie?
Actually, at this point, I don't think it would be that because it's
I like
Titanic. Well, that's the thing. It's become like, I don't know who all the people that went and saw it because everybody loved it,
yeah.
and now everybody hates it.
Yeah,
it makes fun of it.
Movie.
It's like,
it only broke every record known
yeah,
to man.
Yeah, they only went and saw it 10 times.
That thing was only in the theaters for like a year.
Yeah.
There's never been a movie in theaters longer than that movie.
I'm pretty sure that the movie's actually longer than the events of what happened on the Titanic.
Yeah.
I think it sunk faster than
that. May be true. It wasn't a documentary.
Man. Kills yeah. me.
You know what happened was everybody was at a certain age when they went and saw it and they liked it. And
during
now they're all
dates.
Older now and they're like, whatever.
Jaded pricks.
David Lynch is cool.
Like David Lynch is cool.
Well, I think Scotty nailed it. These are all things that personally I think resonate with us, and I'll start us off with the music selection.
This is
definitely a CD that I personally liked, and I knew that it was going to be something that a wide audience was not going to have an appreciation for this because it's largely a country record, even though I really call it more of a southern record than a country record.
I actually don't It didn't come off very country to me.
It did to Sal.
Yeah.
It has elements of both, and it's sort of it's very long, so it has a lot of.
It has a lot. It has some blues in it. It has some country rock, you know, southern rock.
Everything.
It has.
Let's let him tell him what it is.
Yeah.
It is the southern rock opera by the Drive-By Truckers, and it came out in 2001, and it is a two-disc. Rock opera.
Southern rock opera.
Southern rock opera. It is what the title says it is. So,
have at it.
Have at it. How'd you guys like
can
it?
I didn't hear what you guys said, so I'll start.
Yeah, you
first.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom.
It was sort of odd because it reminded me a little bit of what I don't like about a lot of artists. but it also reminded me of stuff that's very good about them. Like when people sing about where they're from, they have a tendency to kind of pull a Springsteen sometimes and complain about it, but then romanticize all the stuff about it that's bad. And that's sort of the conundrum of singing about where you're from is that if you keep doing it all the time, you end up sort of romanticizing it. And I think in this album that you kind of had both. You had moments where it felt like an apology for, you know, the South, but then at other times when that sort of facade of apologizing wasn't around, I kind of liked those songs better when there wasn't that, like, oh, Lynyrd Skynyrd was friends with Neil Young, you know, yeah. South isn't like this. When they didn't have that, I found myself enjoying it more because I wasn't thinking so much about, you know, what they were trying to tell me. I was able just to get a vignette of, like, you know.
Sal and I were actually talking about this on the way in, and it's actually addressed in the record quite a bit, and they even put a name to it, and they call it the duality of the Southern thing. And before we get into this, I definitely want to say that I in no way consider myself a Southerner or growing up in the South. I grew up in Southern Illinois, which is
very close.
It's a weird little pocket universe mm-hmm. that has a lot of the same.
It's virtually Kentucky.
Yeah, I would say I'm a Southerner from a Northern state.
Yeah,
and
I mean, Illinois is a long fucking state.
I grew up an hour south of Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah,
you know, so. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the themes that are present in this record, I grew up with, but I would never say that, you know, I'm a true Southerner. True Southerner wouldn't see that in me. I would, you know, I grew up in Illinois. But talking about that duality of the Southern thing, and it's the growing up in it, knowing what's wrong, and whenever you step away from it, you're still a Southerner, and you'll still defend that. And that's a concept that kind of rings throughout this record.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I told you earlier that sort of bothered me about it was that, you know, specifically when they're talking about Lynyrd Skynyrd, and the one line in the one song is about how the legend of Lynyrd Skynyrd has overshadowed the band and the songs, and yet here's a complete concept album, you know, sort of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so it was sort of that same, you know, duality of, yeah, here's the things that we're complaining about, but at the same time, like Tom said, we're sort of romanticizing them or championing them in some strange way.
I think it's the hard thing about talking, it's like anyone who does anything biographical sort of in a way, is that you can't be objective as much as you want to put out something that says this is an objective
look.
You're
too close to it.
I mean, the very fact that they can't describe what the Southern thing is, it's sort of like the strength and the weakness of it, you know, because they have to keep going back to, oh, it's something that you can't describe, yet they're trying to describe it constantly.
Right.
So there's that, sometimes it works
flaw,
and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah.
I was, definitely agree with you guys on storytelling, kind of lyrical end. For me, once I got past the lyrics and just listened to it from a musical standpoint, lyrically, I felt like what I was saying, or the one of the guys was like a weird Don Henley to me, like Don Henley light.
Oh man,
but. Once I started listening to it without paying attention to what was being said and just trying to listen to it from a musical standpoint, I was hoping for a little bit more because for an album that's called Southern Rock Opera, for me there's a lot of expectations musically.
Sure.
Because Southern rock is, you know, an edgier, kind of more raw, organic fusion of rock and blues, you know, rock, blues, and country all kind of thrown together in one with a little bit of rawness. And so having an album called Southern Rock Opera, but yet it is very, very, very produced and intentional and very planned and never really – I found myself like halfway through every song waiting for them to kick in, you know, where it's like – come on, build me up, and let go. And
you know,
it never had that let go feeling. So while they're telling stories and they're trying to give me the sense of a Southern rock, to me they were missing it by about 30% of reaching musically the feeling of what they were trying to sing about as well, without that organic heart that I think. You know, the music of Lynyrd Skynyrd, or, you know, your Allman Brothers, or, you know, any of those kind of old Southern classic rock bands.
Right, Molly Hatchet.
Yeah, the Molly Hatchets that they had, where all of a sudden you'd hear this burst of vocals, and then this just big bearded, long haired dude going insane with his guitar, or
there were some ballsy songs, but they were maybe not enough. And we're talking about a sprawling two-record opera.
Right.
You know, songs like Ronnie and Neil, songs like Let There Be Rock, I think had some balls
like that
to them.
Song.
Right. I like that song lyrically, but I still feel like it's all of it was just it. None of it had that feel of whenever I listen to a Lynyrd Skynyrd album or I put in any kind of Southern rock album. There's always this sense that either it was recorded on a stage with an audience or it was recorded in some grungy ass barn where dudes just had like 10 beers and they're losing their shit because they love music so much. My sense of feeling here is, even when they started to rock out a little bit, it still felt like there was a producer on one side of a glass going, okay, 2, 3, 4, go. You know, like, it was a little too intentional for me, so it lacked some of that organic connection that I usually have. It
wasn't dirty.
So the musical stuff I actually liked was the stuff that got that drifted away from necessarily, like, the rock part.
Mm.
Anything that was sort of slower to me, it just sounded more interesting, I guess, especially mixed in longer. The one song I really liked a lot is I actually liked musically the song about George Wallace, like, being in hell, because I just thought it sounded different, from everything else that was on there.
It was called Wallace, I think.
It was nice to have, especially with something so long that sometimes, especially as using the word opera also means there's all kinds of different stuff going on in it, too.
Right.
You know, if you're going to name it that, there's going to be, fast parts, there's going to be drama, there's going to be, like, happiness, there's going to be sadness, and if you can't necessarily pull that off with an operatic voice, then you do it musically. You know, and Wallace is one of the few times I thought, like, oh, you know, this sounds different from everything else on there. Mm-hmm. And I also thought it was lyrically one of the times where the sort of, like, facade, even though it was about a historical figure, I didn't feel so much. It had, like, a sense of humor a little bit more about what they were talking about, which kind of made it easier, because it was a little bit satirical and a little jokey about, the fate of George Wallace, which I thought was actually more functional as far as me understanding what they were talking about than the Lynyrd Skynyrd, Neil Young stuff. I was like, oh, well, I can kind of get what they're talking about when they talk about that.
Yeah. I looked at it kind of in two ways, because on the one hand, it should be something that I would be into, because any other medium, whether it's film or books or comics, it's like this is the sort of thing that I would tend to gravitate towards, something that is very well thought out, has a message,
layered,
ambitious, complex, that kind of stuff. I enjoy that in movies and books, comics, everything else. But in music, there's this whole other realm of listening to something that's enjoyable. And I grew up listening to country music. My parents both listened to country music.
Not by choice.
Not by choice.
Fucking Alabama.
I mean, my mom's from Arkansas, straight up hillbilly from Arkansas, and she listened to country.
Yeah.
And not this new fucking age bullshit country. They're like real horrible fucking country. And so I hate country music. I love the blues. I love Southern rock.
Right.
And there was stuff in here that I really enjoyed, mostly in the second album or the second act. Some of the more sort of punk country stuff that was in there, but overall, I mean, it's not something that I would tend to probably ever listen to.
Buy any more drive-by truckers.
No, I mean, I appreciated what they were trying to do, but once again, there was that weird, paradox of it, that it was like, here's what we're trying to say, because we're trying to defend the South, or we're trying to open up and make you understand more about Lynyrd Skynyrd, or we're trying to make you understand these things. But then on the flip side, we're going to fall back into all the cliches that we're complaining about people see us as.
It's kind of like Springsteen when he does the song that was on the same album as Born in the USA, where it's all about like guys complete the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
Glory days. I mean, that's just the point where you go from like, oh yeah, my hometown sucks when you're 18. You're like, oh, my hometown sucks. I'm 45 and I'm still lit. There's something different.
Where is this band from?
He is from, I want to say, Alabama originally. He was in Florida now. And I think that there's members from Texas. Right. They're all Southern born.
One thing that I did notice on the vocal side was whether or not these guys truly have a Southern accent, I don't know. But their Southern accent in the song seemed too much of an act for me. It could have very well been real.
Well, that was the weird thing. You know, I had...
There was a song where he just, like... There were parts... Everything was, like, it was affected. Like, affected, not affect. You know, very... Down and now.
There
like
were,
every,
there were
you know.
Parts of that album that I almost thought were a joke. Because they seemed like... you know... like, what's that? The Redneck Comedy Tour.
Right.
I mean, just like that over-the-top
I mean. Yeah,
sort of
like,
Southern...
Yeah, because living in Tennessee, you know, obviously know every person in my mother's side of the family is a hick from way back. I mean, they have the accents. They're full on. And even when you listen to country music, the majority of country musicians don't... They have a twang in their voice, but it's only the fucking sellout Trace Adkins guy that's, you know, like,
well, I think,
honky tonk, but don't be down.
I think there were some songs where the Southern accent was accentuated for effect,
right.
You know, and that's...
I think... I was going to say, I think part of it, too, is that you... this sounds weird because it's a music album, but you have weird perspective shifts where I think some of the songs, the person that's singing... isn't them commenting anymore about the song. It's them singing as someone
who
lives within that. And I think... And then you have songs like Ronnie and Neil, which is very much not... It's a song looking outside into something as opposed to a song like that Mean Highway or whatever. That's a song of someone in that situation.
Sure.
Not analyzing it, but just singing about
Casey's
it.
Brother.
Like it switches in between sometimes.
That perspective.
Or like it switches to the Wallace, that spoken word thing about Wallace, where it's no longer me talking about my experience, but me explaining, you know. And I think sometimes that's what's confusing about it and listening to it is that it's not necessarily, I think it's supposed to be not a joke, but it's not them all the time.
Right.
But I think that's not very clear.
And, there's very much a story. The first act or the first disc is about this
guy who grew up
and then he goes away and then he comes back to the South in a band.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that it seemed to me like there's three kind of stories going on in that. In it, you know, it's like his almost his own the lead singer, like almost
Patterson
his own childhood and story, and then the story of Lynyrd Skynyrd, and then just sort of the story.
I listened to it with Neil Young.
What did Neil have to say?
He said he always hated Ronnie.
I would like to. I will. I'm going to have to go and listen to an album that is not concept by this band.
I'll get you a copy of The Dirty South
to see,
and I think that you will like
that. Yeah, to see what because I think maybe that was one of the one thing stopping me.
The high concept.
Yeah, it was, again, because sitting there listening to it, I'm trying to get engrossed in it and believe the music and because it was kind of an act, you know.
It's an opera.
And sometimes that just took me out of it, and I couldn't let myself just get soaked in the music sometimes.
Right. Well, that was what I had. I mean, I listened to it once, and I'm like, oh, that was... Okay. I mean, my initial reaction to it was just like, what the... What is this?
What
is
the same?
What has Chris done?
Yeah.
What have you done to me?
And then I kind of listened to it again, and I had actually went online and looked up some information about the album and about the band a little bit. I'm like, oh, okay. Now it makes more sense what they're trying... You know, but it's like walking into that sort of cold and not knowing what their intention was.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's like overall my whole feeling about it is I really enjoyed what they... were trying to say. I really enjoyed how they put it together. I really enjoyed the thought and the effort put into it, but I just didn't really enjoy the music that much. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I just didn't really get into the music
that
much.
It's a very ambitious thing to try.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will tell you, if you ever have the opportunity to see them in concert, they are really
good. While I was listening to it, I thought, this album sounds so overly produced, I bet you they're a great live band. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and you will see a minimum of 2/5 of Jack Daniels consumed during a set.
Folks down here, New Young just wasn't around. Meanwhile,
All right, that will take care of the CD selection. So, also want to mention, after we're done with this, I'm sure folks will be throwing up comments on the forum. I didn't do that bad.
Throwing up comments on the forum.
Yeah. Put some comments on the forum. Oh. Go check.
Posting.
Do we have any posts to read for about this stuff at all?
Yeah, we'll pull some up here in a little bit.
Yeah.
I would have fucked this movie in the ass.
Damn. As Scotty so eloquently said, it is time to talk about the movie selection.
That's not necessarily bad. He might be really
excited. Yeah, I might like it. I might
love
it.
Who knows?
It might be like a prison thing, or it might be like a little, hey,
this
baby.
This is how I express
can
my
I
love.
Can I just put the tip in your butt?
We don't know.
We're going to play just the tip.
We'll find out.
Just the tip.
We'll find out. Well, this was The Devil's Backbone, and I picked this mostly because I love the movie, but also partially because I know of Scotty's hatred for subtitles.
I don't mind subtitles.
Because Sal has a lot of notes.
I have notes.
So mine's probably not going to be my thoughts aren't as extensive, but I'll probably be able to feed off her. But I'm just going to say, I really enjoyed the movie.
Okay.
Despite the subtitles. The subtitles don't bother me, especially with Guillermo movies, like Pan's Labyrinth.
It's not a heavily subtitled movie.
But I do find the movie itself, the actual thing that the movie is about, which is really this this kind of school for war orphans, to be very good. I found that extra additive of this ghost...
The ghost story?
...to be... absolutely pointless.
I disagree.
Yes, conversation.
While watching it, I thought was very cool, and I even think Guillermo talks about this during Pan's Labyrinth, where he brings up Devil's Backbone and how this was Pan's Labyrinth is
an unofficial prequel. Almost.
Yeah, well, it's almost like Pan's Labyrinth. He almost did more of what he wanted to do, as far as adding more of the fairy tale, more of the mystical, the fantasy elements. Where this, I liked that side of things. I just felt that it was focused on so little and kind of randomly that I felt like it could have been just as strong a movie as without it, because I cared about the characters, I cared about the kids and the situation that they were in, that it just seemed like he made that movie, but he's also a comic book nerd and wanted some kind of mystical shit to be in it as well.
I like that it was kind of understated, the amount of the horror aspect and the ghost story, because it just became part of the story.
Well, this is coming from a person, too, that every time I've seen anything on this movie or heard anybody talk about, all they've ever talked about is the ghost parts. And I've seen clips of the kid and the ghost kid. And so kind of seeing all the stuff on it and hearing all the stuff on it and then seeing it and it having it be such a, like, really a small part of it.
See, I thought that was actually what I enjoyed about the mystical part of the horror part of it, was that it was very subtle and subdued. And it led to it was... I think it was a lot of the reasons why, like the main kid, Carlos.
Right.
I found myself really liking that character, and I think a lot of what I liked about him is sort of his fearlessness. And I wouldn't have had that if it wasn't for the fact that he was sort of, you know, examining or investigating this mystery of the ghost and what was the ghost and trying to figure out what it was. But the fact that it was really subdued. To me, what I loved about Pan's Labyrinth was at the end of that film, you weren't sure if any of that was real or if it was all in her head.
Right.
And I felt kind of the same thing, not as much in this one, but it was almost like up until the end, the whole ghost seemed more sort of a metaphor than necessarily... a plot device of there's a ghost in the school.
You know, I definitely got that. I just felt like the metaphor... because of the subject matter and the characters that they did so well, it was there for me anyway. You know what I mean? I almost felt like you don't need to show me a metaphor of what you're already dealing with in front of me on screen with the characters that you've developed.
The thing I liked about it is, especially with the sort of the history of the Spanish Civil War and sort of how it ties in, because obviously this is something he must care a lot about because he's made two movies. He's made two movies about it. One of the things I really liked about one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Dr. Cesar is talking about the fetuses in the old rum.
Right.
And he's talking, you know, he challenges the kid about, you know, what do you believe, you know, do you believe in science or do you believe in fantasy?
Like, and if you do, then
there's
you'll
a
drink
choice now. Of like, and to me, it sort of deals with the sort of collision of this war going on with us also with this, the mystical stuff. To me, it was like a challenge to the characters of like what they believed in, you know, how much of it was going to, how rational can you be, like, you know, values are being challenged.
And in 1939 Spain, you're talking really around the world, you're talking about clashes of science and the old world coming together. And that is a time that these things are colliding.
The one thing I really loved about the movie is I loved how good the child actors were in that movie. Because I like it when kids... I hate it when people make movies about kids and they make the kids to be geniuses or idiots.
Right.
And it was like these kids, the resolution at the end is really the kids taking care of the problem, but the stuff they do isn't like crazy, like, oh, we're going to build a giant frame to like roll down, you know,
they didn't
like
rearm the bomb.
It wasn't something silly like that. It was like, well, they kind of fucked up and like couldn't quite get it right and all that stuff, but it was believable, you know, that what they were able to do. And also the kid who was the bully at the beginning, turned out to be, I thought he was awesome in that movie because such an understated, like, he wasn't a character that you saw, like,
he was
run around smiling and then become sad, but, like, he seemed like an older person than he was, which is a very realistic thing probably for a war orphan to be sort of haunted.
I love the fact that in the beginning he's sort of the cliche of the bully at the school, but then by the end you realize that there's more to him than that. I mean, he has some issues, and that's why he is the way he is, why he treats people the way he does. And I really enjoyed that part of his character.
I also really enjoyed the scene when that asshole Jacinto blows up the school. And there's this scene where the doctor gets up and he can't hear anything. And I always like it when people do stuff like that. Like, I know it kind of breaks maybe, like, you know, why would we not hear it when we've been able to hear everything in the movie? You know, why are we suddenly hearing his stuff? But
from his perspective.
Yeah, but it's also sort of cool because it has, like, that starkness that you would expect from, like, a disaster. You've got, like, dead kids lying around, which was, like, the other
absolute
thing.
Absolute shell shock.
Just the shock of seeing, you know, how often in kids movies, you never see kids really in danger in movies.
Yeah, that was one of the things that surprised me a lot out of it was that scene in particular.
It's a twisted Goonies. Goonies versus fascists or ghosts.
The one thing I was, even at the end, I really didn't understand at all was the bomb.
A little odd.
Thing with the bomb, I think that bothered me more than anything, was just it didn't seem to make any sense.
I felt like you knew the war was going on without that in there.
Yeah,
like,
and I kind of thought
they tried to tie it, like, at the beginning, they tried to tie it to the ghost story.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed the movie. I just felt like all the aspects of the movie, they lacked about 10%. Like, if they would have just added a little more to each section, it would have brought it all together a little bit. Because I felt like I jumped from scene, like I said, at the beginning, like you brought up the bomb. They tried to tie the bomb
into a
ghostly thing.
But it didn't really have...
And then at a moment, they actually were like, she's alive and it's ticking. And when the bomb came, they tried to tie it to Santi dying.
Yeah, as it happened on the same day, but...
Yeah.
It was strange. The bomb was a very strange thing, and I kept trying to figure out what the point of
that was.
Maybe
it got the part where they explain it gets cut out.
Cut out.
You know, like, it felt like there should have been one extra thing where it was,
you know,
like,
the bomb is always there, I think, to remind you of the war and to show you the thin line that these war orphans are always walking between life and death. And they have a ghost that is there. And all this happens on the same night. And you were talking about, you know, the metaphor of the ghost. And I actually had read a review online that did a really nice job of talking about that and explaining that about, you know, the whole thing about a ghost is that they haven't been able to move on to the next realm because their death is unavenged. Mm-hmm. And using that metaphor of the ghost and you know, the Spanish people that had been basically rolled over by these fascists, and that the entire movie is about these oppressed people that are trying to find some sort of if not vengeance, at least, you know, some way towards redemption, but it doesn't matter because they're already dead.
Well, I think
the best that can happen is that they can be avenged.
You also have to look at, like, the adult characters in the story are all literally damaged somehow. Like the woman who has a fake leg, mm-hmm. the doctor who's impotent.
Can't get it up.
You know, can't get it up. Like a lot of the adults.
I thought their
adults,
story was great. I mean, yeah. It was tragic and just a fantastic story. I thought the doctor was just
this is great
actor.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. The human story I thought was fantastic. Yeah. I thought that if there was a little bit more added to the ghost story element, yeah. and it was a little bit more even, I would have cared more about, because by the time you get to the end and what's his name falls in the water,
Jacinto,
and Santi's dragging him down, that could have been so much more powerful to me had I cared more
about
Santi in the first place. Uh-huh. I mean, they. Guillermo, he tries to make me care about Santi the whole time by mentioning his name right when the
but
kid
he couldn't tell you
school.
The story because it was a mystery of how he died.
Right, yeah, and I found my, like, it's like he waited too long
to tell us about
to
it.
To tell me, because at first I'm intrigued, because right when the kid gets to the school, you see Santi, you see the ghost in the doorway. And so right off the bat, I'm intrigued. And he decided to wait, I mean, and you keep getting glimpses of Santi, and then the kid sees him. And it drug out just a little too long to where by the time they actually told me the story, I almost was like, well, I'm already invested in this other story now. Yeah. Like, I'm already invested in the struggle that the human characters are fighting with this war going on and showing the world that they live in. And, you know, for the first time, it's not like this school is, you know, it's not – I get so sick of seeing these schools with the evil headmaster and the kids are trying to fight. It was like – here's people trying to do good, kids that are basically genuinely good. Of course, you have one bully, and obviously you see that he's a little damaged because a friend had died, and you watch a friend die. But by the time they actually got to the Santi story, I was already invested in another
story. More invested in what else is going on.
And so then when this ghost story gets kind of evolved, I was like, well, that's – I guess it's cool, but –
well, that was kind of the whole thing about Santi, is that after he died, they just kind of pushed him off to the side, and they forgot about him, or they suppressed that.
Well, they made up the story that he ran away and someone found him. Yeah. You know, like, they made up a happy ending, even though there's no reason to believe that.
So while I can definitely see your point and agree with that, I think that it almost reinforces the disposability of these kids. These are totally forgotten about kids.
For me, it was because he used it in the end as a resolution for the main characters, is why it seemed to work for me. You know, it's like his story and his vengeance was what allowed them to defeat.
Well, you know what,
but that's
really
what I'm saying.
Like
using him as the resolution because they left him, because he didn't play a role in the problem for the majority. I mean, like I said, obviously he was brought up, but because you saw conflict in so many other areas, to then throw it back to him to wrap it all up for me is when I was like, ah, shit. You know, because then all of a sudden I was like, damn, I wish I would have more of the horror/ghost story than we got.
I did appreciate the fact that the way it ended wasn't like they lured him into the room and then Santi jumps from the ceiling and, like, you know, crawled out of the TV I did appreciate that. And the one thing that bothered me, and this is probably just more due to the fact that I really got into the movie, is when that kid falls through the window when he's trying to escape Galvez, and he, like, hurts his foot, and he can't drag himself the fucking 5 feet around the corner to unlock the door.
And that was very weird how, like, out of nowhere, they just kind of randomly did the doctor ghost.
The doctor ghost.
Just, like, really quick, and they bring the doctor back, and, of course, it's very...
At the end,
sometimes
he's
that's my problem
narrator.
With Guillermo del Toro, is
you don't have to be poetic all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to wrap
Spanish, man. Yeah. He's Spanish. You got to be poetic.
Because at the
Spanish.
End, it wraps up with its big kind of speech, yeah. kind of poetic speech.
Well, he was the narrator at the beginning.
I was
and
like
then
yelling,
Galvez, sort of
come on, dude.
Right.
Just
well,
hop around the
he
corner,
was.
Man.
Well, I mean, he was a little kid. Oh, kid well, hurts their legs.
He's a war orphan.
Yeah, that doesn't make him any.
Just crawl well, around the corner.
He wasn't even 5 feet. He could have probably just leaned from the perch that he was sitting on.
He was around the corner a little
The whole time I was like, why doesn't he just go around
yeah.
the
corner? Just lock the fucking
lock the door.
And, you know, I was like, it's not, the window wasn't that big. Yeah. I mean, the window was pretty big. Throw another kid out.
Yeah. You know you got I mean? Plenty to go.
Yeah. I very much enjoyed it. Yeah, I did enjoy the movie.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. I thought it was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, the cinematography on it was fantastic because it had sort of that Wild West.
Same cinematographer as Jackie Brown, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yes. I could tell.
You watch, I think that there's filmmakers because obviously this is an earlier film mm-hmm. for Guillermo. It was not as much of an international release, but you can tell. That when he got to Pan's Labyrinth, it was almost, I know that he'll call it, to save face a little bit, a unofficial prequel.
Mm-hmm.
I view it as his remake, in a way.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, he had more money, obviously.
He had more money, and
everything ties together.
Because if you look at it, Pan's Labyrinth does a perfect job of giving you both stories.
I think, Pan's Labyrinth is a much better, it's a much better film.
It's more balanced.
The fantasy mm-hmm. story alongside of the real world. I think this movie was his, he wanted to kind of create a new genre of mixing these kind of stories. True tragic stories, because usually it's a fantasy story that doesn't have anything really tragic, but a bunch of cool fantasy stuff, or it's a normal drama. And he kind of went with, you could see with this movie,
it's a mashup.
He was trying to do both. But I don't think he necessarily knew exactly how to walk the line yet. And you can see, I mean, again, he did a great job with the movie.
If you like Pan's Labyrinth, you should probably watch this.
And you do bring a great point that you really could take the whole ghost story out of this, and it's mm-hmm. still a quality movie.
Yes.
You know, but I did really enjoy the ghost story aspect. I thought it really added to the character.
I love the special effects of the ghost.
Maybe this is a Spanish movie genre, because I just watched another subtitled film. I forget what it's called, but it has a mystical thing going on with it too about a woman whose mom disappeared, is presumed dead, and then shows up again, and you know everyone thinks she's a ghost.
Right.
But I'm not going to spoil the end for you. But maybe that's like a Spanish thing.
Cinema thing.
I'll have to look it up.
Maybe.
Yeah, awesome. Look it up.
I'd like to see if there was more ghost stuff cut out.
Yeah, maybe it got edited. It wasn't that long of a movie.
Yeah, because it wasn't that long of a movie.
Very rarely do I think, that movie should have been longer, because most of the time I feel movies
should be 20 minutes shorter.
Have gotten a bit extravagant in letting everything in.
Yeah, because screenplays used to be about 90 pages average, and now they're averaging about 120.
But I think it'd
be interesting to see if there was some of that side of the story cut out a little bit, because it just seems... To name your movie Devil's Backbone, The Devil's Backbone, and...
Did you like what The Devil's Backbone was?
I just thought that was kind of... Again, that's another piece that I was like, that's kind of weird and random. No, I mean, it's not like it's dumb or anything. It's just like, you named your movie The Devil's Backbone. It didn't really... And then you right in the middle of the movie, the doctor has his explanation, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, this is going to tie in, because the credits all are looking at the baby, and you're all like, this is some crazy shit.
You know? Well, it's kind of what I talked about earlier. It's that collision of new world and old world.
It also ties into the imagery of Santee under the water. And the thing with the gold weighing him down underwater, I was like, well.
Yeah.
That was a little Disney.
He's already got a ghost after him, man.
Yeah. Does he really need gold?
The gold weighing him down.
I was like, how are these kids going to get out of here? That's what I was thinking.
I thought Santee should have worked a little harder. He waited for him to get all the way down to the bottom. I was like, dude.
Yeah, Santee could go everywhere in the compound, but he's like, bring him down here.
Bring him in the water.
Jesus.
I'm only powerful in the water.
Just kids, help us out.
Yeah,
and it got all Lord of the Flies.
Did anybody else get a little shocked from when they first cut to the scene of Josito or whatever his name is banging the one-legged broad. I was like, what? What is that?
Yeah,
what?
I was a little weird. That didn't need to be like
I masturbated.
Yeah, Kemp.
No, I just like, it was just like
as that wooden leg on.
That's like another thing of like
he was doing it for the gold.
No, it was just odd. All of a sudden, it was just like, wow.
See it? Yeah,
I mean, it makes like, what sense the hell? With the whole impotent doctor.
And I did think they did a good job of. Yeah, well, that played into that, but I thought they did a good job of with that character as you weren't quite sure. I mean, obviously, he was kind of a prick in the beginning, but you weren't sure what his
depths. You almost wanted to root for him. Yeah, because he was one of them.
But that's where they fuck up. At the beginning, they make him whiny, like, mean and sympathetic because he just wants a better life. But then on the drop of a dime, he's a straight-up villain.
But I think
it was a drop of a dime. Though. I mean, it seemed to like go.
He made a decision.
As soon as he cut
really...
the kid's face, I mean, right then and there, he was a straight up villain. The rest of the time, all of a sudden, like before, he's all like, "I just didn't want to stay here."
See, I don't know.
And
he's looking through the photos,
and then he cuts the face, and he's fucking the bitch, and it's like.
But the thing is, at the end of the film, he kept all those photos that you thought that he threw in the fire,
right,
like the things
photos,
of his past
yeah,
that he thought
yeah.
that there's still a part of him that. You know, that's when he's reading the postcard about
he
his
certainly,
dad,
as right? it went on, he became more and more villainous. But
right.
I thought it played out enough where it wasn't until even after he cut the kid's face. That was the first sign of it, really, of his. You know, but it got worse and worse. It was like, okay, he's trying to steal the gold, and then it became okay. I'm willing to kill someone for the gold, and then it's like I'm going
to
kill everybody for it because I have no other. You know what I mean? It seemed to progress. I mean, there was a progression of him there.
I'm sick of talking about this movie.
All right,
feels like I've
watched it four times.
Watching it,
we've talked about it longer than the movie.
But you guys liked it?
I liked it.
Yeah,
a lot.
It was a good movie.
Good,
definitely well worth seeing.
Guillermo del Toro is becoming one of my favorites.
If you have watched this and not Pan's Labyrinth.
Go watch Pan's
Go
Labyrinth.
Go watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Don't necessarily watch Hellboy 1.
I like
Hellboy.
If
you like cool pictures, go watch Hellboy.
That's me.
Don't have your standards too high
for
Hellboy.
He's a better
Pan's Labyrinth's a much better movie than Hellboy.
Yeah. Whoa, what?
Sorry. Sorry,
where's
fans.
The comic book?
Cred?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking just to go back real quick, did you like kind of the comic book aspect of...
That the kid had the comics and...
Del Toro, he's
I like the
Count
of Monte Cristo stuff.
They were Golden Age size, too, so historically accurate.
I did want... Here's a... There were some things that I felt that he introduced with you bringing up the comic book thing made me think of something else. Is right there at the beginning of the film when they leave him and he runs out and he drops and they have the conversation about the Count of Monte Cristo. I was like, ooh, he's gonna take the Count of Monte Cristo. They're obviously pointing out that the kid's reading the story,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like they were gonna do a little bit more of a throwback throughout the story.
To that.
About the Monte Cristo, the Count of
sort of like
Cristo,
a dangling, they left that
well,
dangling.
The, yeah,
out
the
there
Count of Monte Cristo is a great story, and I felt at the beginning like, oh, that's very smart of him because it's going to be, that could be a great metaphor and a kind of a parallel alongside of a ghost story.
Well, I almost thought like it did have it in a weird way with, I can never remember the bad guy.
Jacinto.
With him almost in a reverse. Like, if the Count of Monte Cristo was the bad guy,
right.
You know, coming back to the village, the gold, looking for the gold, that kind of thing. I mean, it did. But, yeah, you're right. It was the they laid that out there, but then never came back to it again.
I did think at the end, though, when, like, he could have done a little better time of, or a little better job of showing some time passing, because I felt like they just kicked him out of the building.
And he, was
and he just
back.
Walked around to the back door. Like,
it was always sunny.
Yeah, like it. Obviously, they meant to show like some time had passed because they were loading the truck
right,
and stuff
right.
like that. But it, watching it because it happened so quickly,
it was like he walked around. He walked out just, and then walked around.
Yeah, as soon as they shut the door, he ran. Around, and then they're all like, "What's the back door?" I'm like, "You just kicked him out. Of course, the back door. He's coming in." So it, yeah, but that's usually my problem with a lot of movies is people that aren't is not being able to show
the pacing,
a passing.
Well,
time.
That's a scene that's been cut out, or and yeah. they, you know,
all of a sudden, Jamie's got a mustache.
Yeah.
Well,
back
it's
door.
Been several weeks. It's been several weeks. I've all grown right. this mustache.
Hi, me.
Podcast at Blue Oyster Cult concert. 14 years old. And I thought them lasers were a spider chasing me. On my way home, got pulled over in Rogersville, Alabama, with a half ounce of weed and a case of Sterling Big Mouth. My buddy Gene was driving me, just barely turned 16. And I'd like to say I'm sorry, but we live to tell about it. We live to do a whole bunch more crazy, stupid shit. And I never saw Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I sure saw Molly Hatchet. With 38 Special and the Johnny Van Zandt Band.
Don't move on to the trade paperback selection.
Oh, here we go.
And I picked this once again. Kind of. Scotty set the boilerplate for picking some of our trades.
Right.
I wanted to pick a self-contained story that didn't have a big story before it, where you didn't have to immediately continue on to volume 2, volume 3, volume 4. Excuse me.
He threw up on the mic.
With that in mind, I probably would have picked Sleeper Volume 1, which I think is an amazing series, but that has three volumes following it, and I wanted something a little bit more self-contained, so I picked the prequel, and that is Point Blank, which is by Ed Brubaker and Colin Wilson.
You know, this is almost the exact opposite of The Witching Hour, where The Witching Hour was all character and virtually no story. And this, and not, it's not like one's better or the other, because this book is almost entirely story with like
no
a
character.
Little bit, with like just a little bit of character. Oh, just really cool. Everyone else,
yeah.
Because
the only cool. character, if you have any idea of any other characters in the wild, you a lot of character you almost even the little characters they put in is you have to already have it.
Yeah, I mean the thing I did like about it was, as opposed to Witching Hour, it had a story that I could kind of follow, which for me, if I had to pick between the two, like a series where I'm reading it and it's tons of character, but I don't know what the hell's going on most of the time, or a story where I can't, you know, there's a story to it and there's, you know, everyone who's in it is obviously a device to move the story in a certain direction. It is plot.
This is a plot.
This is a plot book.
Yeah.
That being said, I kind of liked it.
I felt, I actually didn't, and I didn't like it at all, actually. And a lot of it is exactly what Tom said. I felt like it was, not only was it such a plot-driven book with not, again, because Cole is narrating it, you get a little bit more of Cole as a character, but it's so plot-driven that I never, ever once cared what he was trying to find out. And therefore, anybody who came along to help him find that out, I didn't care either. You know what I mean? Like,
it sort of depends, I think, on how, because at some point, I got enjoyment simply out of knowing what. I wasn't curious about what was going on because I knew there was going to be a resolution. I know, you know, when you have a book that's so heavy plot-wise, you know there's. It's not going to. That book isn't going to end with like a open ending to it, because everything in that story is leading up to
leading to some sort of resolution. Leading to a conclusion.
So I wasn't necessarily like dying to know what was going on, but I also got some enjoyment. You know, overall, I did like it. I did get some enjoyment from like, oh, well, that's what happened. You know, not like a like you were saying, I wasn't dying to find out, you know, what was going to happen. I was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen at the end of this.
Yeah,
and then it happened. Yeah,
I think I just felt that not only was it only plot driven, but the plot itself was not original at all. You know what I mean? It was a very, very typical.
Don't put in comics.
I need to find something out. Or I need to find out who did this. And then I'll go to this guy, and this guy will send me to this guy, and this guy will send me to this guy. Yet, even going. And that's okay, because I'm not saying that everybody has to be original. That is that's a tried and true classic form of telling this kind of story, except at least along the way have interesting things happen. And I felt like each step of the way was just Like, oh, here's a cameo from Midnighter. We all, you guys know Midnighter, right? Here's a cameo by Zealot. You all know Zealot, right?
That's almost the weird weakness of it being in the Wildstorm universe is that Midnighter's in the story, but I don't necessarily know that it had to be Midnighter to that portion of the story. It works because the info he gets from him would be something that the Authority would have, but the pieces of the story don't necessarily, like, aren't dying for it to be the Authority where he gets the information, you know, where that information comes from. I think that's a little...
And they are part of that universe.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit of
the... He is a part of that community.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, for me, I read it when it first came out in single issues, and what I enjoyed about it was the fact that it was... I mean, it is certainly a very plot-driven story. It is not an original tale. I thought it was pretty unique in its telling, in the structure of it, and how he designed it. You know, that Cole is sort of not remembering and not knowing what's going on, and trying to figure out something that he did.
Right.
He's, you know, basically it's basically a murder mystery.
Right.
Yeah. But the guy figuring it out is the guy who committed the murder.
Right. Which you don't find out.
Until, which I thought was a pretty unique thing in a superhero comic.
Right.
But what I enjoyed about it the most was when it initially came out, being in the Wildstorm universe and that character in particular, it was a different look at that character and that
right.
universe. And to me, it was like, oh, this is actually a pretty cool universe in the hands of a good writer, mm-hmm. where it's like the whole Wildstorm thing, and especially a guy like Grifter, who's like, you know, so the Punisher
cool,
meets
cool
Wolverine,
guy.
You know,
he's a dude
I mean,
with guns.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's not a very unique character, but taking it, and this was sort of one of the first examinations of, like, telling smaller stories with superheroes that don't really have anything to do with superheroes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We've seen a lot of it since then, but like I said, I mean, I couldn't read it the other day having not already read it.
Well,
so when I already read, you know what I mean? So it's like, it was harder for me to like go, well, I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying what I enjoyed about it when I first read it was
coming from a person who, and when I was younger, I read all the Wildstorm books. So I mm-hmm. recognize all the characters.
Yeah.
But, trying to read a story that is, again, like trying to just focus on this story as its own story, to me, like because it was so plot driven, it was a little lazy and resting on the fact that it was riddled with Wildstorm characters, and that's supposed to, like, I'm writing the story, but you do a lot of the work for me and filling in the holes of characters.
You don't really need to know anything about any of those characters
to read this story.
But
I got to care about characters or I don't give a shit where the story goes. Because I don't like stories where you can just interchange characters and the story doesn't change.
You didn't feel like you cared about Cole or cared?
Not a bit.
Okay.
I mean,
To me, it was like I enjoyed seeing Cole as sort of this bumbling, drunken idiot.
But only because you already know, because Cole is a part of the Wildcats, and all of a sudden he's drunk.
Yeah, well, that was part of it. I mean, it's just sort of I enjoy those sort of anti-hero characters anyway that are full of flaws. And he's sort of stumbling through this mystery he's trying to figure out, and he's not very good at what he's doing.
He's out of his depth. He's playing against people that...
I mean,
know the game better than he
There's
does.
No question I enjoyed it because it was a play on all the
characters
stuff
that you
care
about. Right.
Just that universe.
Right.
And just it was like I enjoyed the fact of like seeing the real power in the Wildstorm universe isn't the guys in tights and, you know, with power or with crazy costumes. It's these guys like in the real world that have the real power behind the scenes manipulating people and doing that. You know, Tau and Lynch are obviously way more powerful than a guy like Midnighter. You know what
well,
I mean?
That's been known for a really long time.
I'm just saying, not in superheroes.
Yeah, the old Team 7 books and stuff like that that came out a long time, right alongside Gen 13 as it was rolling along, started to give you ideas of how powerful.
But if
Lynch
you don't
was.
Know that going into this book, it tells you that. I guess I was just trying,
even having history of the Wildstorm universe, trying to just read this as an original story without having to hearken to all the other stuff I think an anti-hero is cool as the next guy if it wasn't so that's everybody now. Like, I didn't find
Well, yeah, but that's not this book's fault.
Well, I understand. Well, but I understand that, but I can't help but while reading it just go, oh, I've read this.
See, I never read many of the Wildstorm books. I mean, I know who the characters are. I mean, I never really cared about Grifter before, and I guess I still kind of don't that much. But I mean, I did like, and I think it's just my own personal thing is that I sort of enjoy on some level, you know, like when I was a kid, I used to love reading Agatha Christie novels, you know, and like I can't really say that I ever gave a shit about any of the characters in an Agatha Christie novel because I enjoyed the structure, which is entirely different from. It depends completely on what you're looking for within the story. I did have two things. That you read it in single issues.
Yes.
Did it make any sense in single issues?
It was much harder to read, much easier to read in trade paperback.
And
but it's intentionally written that way. I mean, he intentionally wrote it to be a sort of obtuse. I mean, he wants you to.
I would have thought it would been really hard to read.
It was. It was, and I mean, it was way more difficult to read than in the trade format.
And did anyone else have problems with the paper in the trade?
Glossy,
sticking together constantly and skipping pages.
No, I didn't have that problem.
Because I couldn't. A couple times I flipped pages and I was just like, "Oh well, whatever. This is just how the story's going." Right. But really, I actually missed a page.
I want to make sure that I don't think that it was poorly written. I just think my tastes land more on stories being told.
Yeah, it's just
with characters I care about.
I mean, I like you, the Agatha Christie kind of thing, where it's the structure of it and. Yeah. Just sort of that mystery story. You don't necessarily have to love the characters if you like that kind of story. But if you don't like that, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, if you don't like that kind of story,
Then moving my piece around the game board and caring about my piece and not just caring what the game board is.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't matter. Here's just the layout.
That comes down to if you like Cole or not, or if you, you know, I even know if you're rooting for him, but if you want to see him solve this, and if you care about him solving
to me, it was just a cool little mystery told in an interesting way, and it happened to also be in a very familiar universe at the time when it first came out, told in sort of a unique way.
Right.
I mean, shown in a different perspective.
I guess part of it too is like I mean, obviously you see him at the beginning and he's getting ready to get killed, and then I just felt like. Everything was so easy for him as well along the way. I mean, sure, he pulls out guns and stuff.
It's because he was being manipulated the entire time by Tal.
Right. And comes out at the beginning. But what I'm saying is reading a story, and while I'm reading through the story going, oh, wow, this is pretty easy for him. So then when I get the big crazy, like the 12, it was being manipulated, I'm like, oh, they made it really easy for him. Crazy. You know what I mean? Like, that's
because you did have to read, because you read all the parts where
right.
It was easy.
Yeah,
for
so well. Yes, it was a twist, but I was already bored by getting me to the twist. Like, it was just kind of like very typical getting to the twist.
Why do you hate freedom?
I do hate freedom.
Well, Cole knew he was being manipulated throughout the book.
He didn't know who.
And it was just like, who is yanking my chain? One of the things I did want to mention, because it is told, and you don't really know about it until you get deeper into the book, that it is told in a nonlinear timeline. There are flashbacks that you don't even really know are flashbacks.
Until you get later
in the book. But if you go back and you notice the way that...
hang with it, Scotty.
Well, I did. But I am saying there were times, exactly what you're saying, where you're going, wait, hold on. Oh, shit,
that was a flashback. But if you go back and if you look at how color is used in the book, like all the scenes that... happened that
what
night.
What do you guys think of the art?
It's okay.
I
like how Chris is just in the middle of a sentence. Though.
Sounds like
you guys need to go to counseling. You two.
Yeah, you have a problem.
I know what he was saying. We know what he's saying.
I was listening to you, brother.
All the scenes,
but onto your question.
All of the scenes that take place the night in the bar that Lynch gets shot. The background color is red or orange. Mm-hmm. And if you go back, and I actually did this, if you go back and you read all of those in order, you kind of get in a more linear storytelling of what happened that night. Right. So I thought that was an interesting use of color.
I felt the art was pretty decent. There's definitely some Rizzo inspiration, but there was one panel, if I could see somebody's book, there's one panel that made me, because I was like, oh, this guy's pretty interesting artist. But there's two panels that, one panel where he has a close-up of Grifter's eyes, and then weirdly, he decides to break the panel below, but he doesn't really, like, Grifter's hair blends into
Grifter's
face. And
it's a bit odd.
I was like,
he has flesh-colored hair.
Yeah, no, right? Like, that's, you don't do that.
Will Eisner's rolling over in his grave.
Oh, yeah, somebody is crazy in their grave going, what?
What happened?
Yeah, I thought Wilson's, it's Colin Wilson, I thought his art was more than serviceable for the story.
No.
It's he's not anyone that I'm gonna run out and follow around. But yeah, definitely.
Literally,
I did like his. yeah, well, you only do that with writers.
Literally,
I did like a lot of his face designs. I thought the characters all had.
He definitely has a he definitely likes
a little Rizzo. Yeah.
Definitely likes 100 Bullets,
which fits for this.
Again, like I'm being a little harsh. Like I said, I don't think the book is as poorly written or whatever. And obviously, I like other stuff that Brubaker's written. I think it was just because I didn't have a connection with the characters at all.
You get less of the Wildstorm tie-in and much more character development in the story that this is the prequel to. Sleeper, and this is really kind of a setup for Holden Carver. Is that and that's what Lynch is at the beginning. He's trying to
Although
get
Lynch
to Holden Carver.
Somehow ages a lot. Between this and that book.
Well, that's Sean Phillips' interpretation of the character. But, yeah, this is all about Lynch trying to get Holden Carver out of this, you know, deep cover operation that he put him in. And so this leads into Sleeper, which is a phenomenal series.
I did like Sleeper more than this.
It probably doesn't help that I'm not a gigantic, like, spy, espionage, governmental group type of person.
Civic,
you know, I mean,
crime.
That just doesn't fall into my taste. So right away, when I'm entrenched, like the story starts off, so there's probably already things in my head just going.
You're actually being a lot more favorable of this book than I thought you would be, honestly.
Well, like
I know this is not your sandbox.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I said. Like I try, like trying to read it. And that's why I said I wanted to read it as just this book and not compare it to anything else or whatever. But also try to do it objectively because after three pages, I knew it was not my tastes of type of stories, you know. So, I mean, that had more to do with why I didn't like it. That and the character, not liking the characters. Other than that, obviously, I mean, Brubaker's a proven good writer.
It is a crime story, murder mystery.
Yeah.
And that's,
I mean, I do think people who did like it are retarded.
But, no. He hates people.
I'm
who
kidding.
Liked it.
If you like, I'm kidding.
I'll cut out all the pages and reorder it into a linear fashion.
That's what
so
I mean.
If
you
liked
it,
if you liked it, though, definitely pick up Sleeper because I like Sleeper more than this.
Yeah.
And I can see it. Kind of, it's kind of weird because it kind of ties back to the movie. Like the elements of, I thought the elements of what makes Sleeper really good is in this.
We're in there, yeah.
But there's things
this
missing.
This was like the first draft.
This. Yeah, there's things missing in this that are in Sleeper that make Sleeper
I did really like,
better.
I did really like how it ends because it kind of gives you the idea that it could start all over again, that Cole could go try and
book.
Figure it all
it's
over.
It's an infinite book.
Yeah,
it goes on forever.
Kind of interesting.
How about that Simon? Well, here's another art note. How about that Simon Bisley cover?
Not my favorite Simon Bisley.
Really?
Stuff. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of
this
it.
This is the
I'm
actual
a big fan of Simon.
I liked all the covers Bisley did in this,
except the
this
one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't like Cole's hair in the first one. I was like, that's
I
not
think
his
Bisley,
hair looks like.
Yeah. Well, obviously Bisley is a he's Bisley's
like
straight out of the 80s, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Bisley's like the 80s king, so every Bisley hairdo is going to be like
the flock of seagulls.
Yeah, what's up?
As he takes off his bandana and just lets his flowing locks go.
Yeah. But
I'm Grifter.
I liked all the
he draws a mean alley cat. That's all I know.
A junkyard cat. Like to take a look at that
you
cat.
Oh, how do you like Savant's hairdo? That one. That,
all I know
that's
is
one that got me.
Let's take a look at that cat.
The Colin, what's his name? Colin Wilson. Covers that they did on the chapters. Chapter 2, that is a straight up badger. I don't know. That is Badger right there.
Badger is actually Jeff Butler.
Jeff Butler?
The guy that originally drew
Badger. Yeah.
If you ever look,
that's what he looks like?
He looks like? Is he crazy? Does he punch people sometimes? Call everyone Larry?
Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Well, there's times throughout in the art in this that, you know, like most of the time he's very Rizzo, and then he has a dash of other people that have drawn these characters before. I mean, like the picture of Savant here is
very Jim Lee.
Well, and Travis Charest. I mean, the very Charest version, like earlier version of Savant, and that's a Travis face. Kind of. Well, now I'm just going panel by panel, calling this dude out. Whatever.
Why don't you just call him a cocksucker?
I'll just call you a thief and get it done. No, he was. I did enjoy the art. I actually enjoyed the art more than I thought that I would.
Huh. Well, there you go.
All right. Yeah.
That's it. That's the plug.
Done.
Wrap it up.
Finished.
Scotty's getting all irate about hot dogs and chili. And
I love ketchup.
Goddamn mustard and shit.
Ketchup. Don't eat cheeseburger.
I'm holding my mic the rest of the night.
Put that thing down.
All right, that's
you put ketchup on that. Then he'd eat it.
All right. Well, that's our club talk. But we have some, a couple of voicemails that people left us. And in case you'd like to leave us a voicemail, we do have a new 1-800 number, 888 number. I don't have it in front of me.
I got it. Hold on.
But we do have a new toll-free number you can call and leave us a voicemail. It's a lot easier than the last one. You just call and leave a number. Or leave a message. You don't have to.
Last one, you had to do like 900 cartwheels
type in
a code.
And
you had to bump your elbow three times on the closest table.
You had to call this another number to find out what the number was to call.
The number is 1-888-977-5903.
Okay. Or... buy a Willy Wonka bar if you get the gold
Shut
ticket.
Up.
It'll give you the number.
Anyway, here's a voicemail. Ticket. Here's a voicemail somebody left us about one of the club picks.
Hi, Around Comics. This is Cammy Knoxville on the forums. I'm going to let you know that I just got in Point Blank in the mail today. I gave it a read. I got to say, I really, really liked it. And I was really hooked because I don't really know that much about the Wildstorm universe. And so, you know, I knew a few characters like Grifter and Midnighter and whatnot. And so I got really, really hooked into it. And then at the end there, I was just, like, disappointed. Like, in my opinion, it just kind of ended on a down note. Like, not much was resolved. And what the fuck, Chris? Why'd you pick it? Anyway.
I like you, Cammy Knoxville.
Well, Cammy, first of all, thanks for...
Go fuck yourself.
Thanks for sending in the voicemail. Appreciate it. It's a noir tale.
It's a noir.
It's a noir.
No, it's not.
There doesn't...
Yeah.
No.
It wants to be.
I only say that because nothing is noir if it wasn't a
it's
film noir-ish. Made in the 1940s.
It is. Sure. It does. Okay, it's not noir
okay.
because it wasn't done
Thank
in the
you.
40s. But
that's all. I just wanted to point that out.
But
ketchup's good.
It definitely pulls from that. And there isn't a tidy resolution to it. And Brubaker, if you read Criminal, is a huge noir fan. And also you have to remember, this is a prequel. So it continues right into Sleeper. So, yeah, it doesn't
well,
have a tidy ending.
Brubaker, I think, got better as a writer. I mean, this
sure.
book isn't new. It's not like
right.
Brubaker just put that. The stuff, you can see where he's grown from that to, you know, do Sleeper, to do Criminal, which I think
right.
takes elements of that and,
yeah.
and then does it way better. And
yeah, yeah,
way,
no. Yeah. I, and I, that's what I was saying. You could almost see where he probably was just starting to experiment with going into this realm, because this was a very basic template of that kind of story, where, like you said, he's grown as a writer.
If he did 20 stories like that, then maybe you'd be like, well, what's he doing?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, if there was a pleasant resolution to this story, Sleeper wouldn't have worked. So,
We've
already talked about it.
I don't think he had Sleeper planned until this book was done. I mean, he even says that in the back piece. That, anyway.
Next!
The next one, Cammy left us another voicemail in regards to the movie and the CD also. Yeah. So let's listen to that too.
Cammy Knoxville again. I just got done listening to the Drive-By Truckers, and I gotta say, after the first song was going on, the first couple seconds started happening, I was like, "What the fuck am I listening to? Like someone getting pinned down under a truck and like." Death and all this. I was like, what the hell? But then I went on to the other songs and sounded great. You know, I'm not really a fan of Southern Rock, but I enjoyed that album. You know, I'm not really recommended to friends or anything, but, you know, it was nice to listen. It was something different. And as for The Devil's Backbone, oh, awesome film. I highly enjoyed that. So, yeah, Pan's Labyrinth is, like, equally good. And I really enjoyed Pan's Labyrinth, and so I enjoyed that, so it makes sense in what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, okay, yeah, thanks, Cammy Knoxville. Yeah.
Thank you, Cammy Knoxville, for...
glad you liked the CD and found some value in it. And Devil's Backbone?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Pan's Labyrinth is not as equally as good. It's better. Yeah. So fuck off.
Equally.
No, I like you, Cammy Knoxville. Are you really from Knoxville, by the way, Cammy?
No, he actually explained his username on the thread.
Please tell me it's not a play on Johnny Knoxville.
It's a girl that he's stalking in Knoxville named Cameron.
His name is Cameron, and he said when he was younger, he used to do stupid shit.
Cars up his ass.
Yeah, he used to do dumb shit like that, and his friends used to call him Knoxville. So it's just a
camera. See, when I was younger and I did stupid.
Well, I think when he.
God, I'm starting to get old.
You're an old man.
Motherfucker.
When I was young.
Johnny Knoxville when I was younger and I did stupid shit?
When I was young and we did stupid shit, you were just stupid.
Yeah.
And they would just say, look at that dumb asshole.
Oh, look at that poor retarded kid.
they don't have, like, a last name to attach to, you know.
Shit.
You didn't have to put that up
your
nose.
We're all Jesus, fellas.
So thank you.
We had a lot of people post on the forum. It was a lot of, I like this or I didn't like that. But one that did catch my attention is from Lugaro. Is it?
I don't
it's,
know.
Use your fucking names, people.
L-U-G-A-R-U. And he has a luchador mask on. And I'm assuming from the post that he is Spanish speaking. He says, I watched Devil's Backbone when it originally came out in Spanish back in Mexico. I made the mistake of taking my non-Spanish-speaking girlfriend to the movie, expecting it to have subtitles or something. Dough. It was a great time for me, at least. While it never came close to scaring me, the atmosphere is amazing, and the incestuous, murky story hooked me more than the poorly realized horror element.
I agree with him.
Wait, where was
John Luchador?
What country was he in that he expected English subtitles?
Mexico.
Brazil.
Do they have
I think he's from like Argentina or something, if I remember.
Do they have English subtitles on movies outside of the United States in a country that
they don't have? The technology.
I don't know.
The screens are smaller, so you actually only see 60%
of the movie. Black and white on RCA tinnitus.
And they have a guy playing an organ down by the bottom.
They don't actually have a movie. It's
on a cinder block wall.
It's three actors that get on a stage and try to reenact it.
Like a Foley artist.
Yeah.
Jacinto stabs that girl and then turns to the crowd and makes like a big face, like, ooh, look what I've done. And then Oregon goes,
not just one continent. This is everything outside of America.
Any Latin.
Especially the French Canadians.
Well, good Lord.
All right.
That'll take care of my picks. I hope you had fun.
Yes.
Which means it's now time to debut the next month.
December.
Picks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give it to us, Tom.
We'll call it December January picks.
It's Flash Gordon the movie, Flash Gordon the comic, and the soundtrack to Flash Gordon. Crank, I'm kidding.
Crank just got a fucking hard on the size of the room.
Finally the perfect show for me.
Yes. He just looked at Mike and said, "The Crankcast is over."
We're gonna do it. The comic I picked is We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely.
Yes.
The album I picked is Badly Drawn Boy, The Hour of the Wildebeest.
Love it.
I have no idea what that is.
I'm all
and the
over
movie
that
I picked, which I actually picked today, I wanted to pick something completely different from what we picked so far, so I picked the comedy Safe Men, starring Sam Rockwell and Steve Zahn.
Oh, I love Steve Zahn!
I like both of those.
Yes.
And
Paul Giamatti is in it.
Oh!
I didn't want it. We picked a Western and we
your pick
like,
sucked, Chris!
No, we picked.
All right, can we revisit the Witching Hour?
No,
that did suck.
Yeah, we picked, you know, sure we enough. Had a Western and we had a horror movie, and I was like, well, I'm just going to pick like a comedy that I don't think is like
I'm really disappointed. I was really hoping for Young Frankenstein.
Well, I think that's a movie a lot of people have seen.
That's a fucking joke.
And Safe Men. I like Young Frankenstein, but I think that's like a movie I think a lot of people have probably
seen.
And Safe Men's a movie that I think is really funny and no one's ever watched. So I wanted to pick that and a little something different movie wise. Okay. You know?
So we'll have the thread up on the forum. We'll put that up there, all the picks and
I think
you can go and check those out.
I know that Sal and I can already vouch for We Three. Have you read it, Scotty?
No.
Come on.
It made me
cry.
No.
Yeah, it's been done in the last 10 years.
Will I cry?
Yeah, you'll cry like a baby.
You'll cry. It's animals.
Real?
It's about animals.
Oh,
robot killer animals.
Oh, but damn, animals. How'd I miss that book?
That's your
I haven't read
all your tattoos, all your animal tattoos. Yeah.
No, I haven't read.
And Hour of the Wildebeest is...
I have no idea what that is.
And that's also very different. I wanted to pick something different.
You're blowing my mind, Tom.
You're going to burn me a copy of those, right? Because I'll never...
Well, we'll fight
you. You're blowing my mind, Tom.
Yeah. Did that have a cool effect to it?
It was just muffled.
You're blowing my mind.
It's sort of like somebody with a tracheotomy.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going for.
Give him the vocoder.
A little bit. I could just put an effect on you.
No, man. I don't get down with the CG shit.
Oh, sorry.
I'm a practical.
Unnatural.
Yeah, I'm a practical effects artist.
I got you.
And we talked with Cameron at InStockTrades.com this week, and We Three is in stock and ready to go. So run off to InStockTrades.com and pick up your copy.
Scotty's excited. Look at him.
Very nice.
He's barely able to sit.
All right.
He's crumping.
Is that all?
Walking.
Is that all we got? What the?
Yeah.
I did have a couple things I wanted to throw in that I wanted to talk about before we wrap up.
Sure.
First of all, former guest of the program and just all around good and very talented guy, Gabe Hardman. He has a comic at Zuda Comics, which is DC's web comics, and it's called The Crooked Man.
Yes.
So go to Zuda Comics. Is that ZudaComics.com?
Yes.
Is that the address? And check
I
out.
I think it's just Zuda.com.
Is it Zuda.com?
Yeah. I think if you think it shows up on your computer.
I have to
good
say
Warner
thank
Brothers
you
is.
To Gabe, actually.
Gabe's awesome.
he's an awesome guy.
He is a good guy, but
I'm so uncomfortable. Right now.
No,
he saved Sal's life.
My daughter just started kindergarten this year, and in the class,
she's been a very good
this thing. No, they did this thing where they read the story, The Gingerbread Man, and then they made this big gingerbread man cookie.
Oh, you told me.
And
about
he disappeared. They all went out to recess, and they came back, and he was gone. And the teacher made up the story that he ran away, and then they
made up the story. He didn't really run away?
Anyway, my daughter's not listening, so I think I can... Anyway...
Now you're going to tell her about Santa Claus, right?
So, the teacher asked... excuse me. The teacher sent home letters with her to us, asking us to send these letters to people that we know outside of the country, or outside of the area.
Do they have mail outside of the country?
Yes, sir.
Not yet. Still with birds and badgers.
That could send in stories about sightings of the gingerbread man.
Yeah.
And the class would really get... So
that's creepy.
Why is that creepy?
Why didn't I get...
Little...
Fucking scaring me.
Because
cookies
you live
are
here. So I sent out a bunch of emails to people that I know asking if they could do this. If they had a minute, they could just write a little note, a postcard, whatever, send a story into the class about seeing... And Gabe...
He showed up dressed as a gingerbread man.
And fondled his daughter.
Optioned the story in
Hollywood.
He crossed
the line.
What is wrong with you, man?
Wow.
It's all that ketchup you've been
ketchup
in your
good.
Head.
It's good.
No, he wrote a story about, because he lives in L.A., he works in the movie industry, he's a storyboard artist, and he wrote a little story about how he was driving down Hollywood Boulevard and he saw the Gingerbread Man on the Walk of Fame. But then on the back of the card, he actually drew it out because he's an artist. Mm-hmm. And it was just this really cool thing, and he sent it.
Cool.
Sent it.
That is
so
nice.
It was very cool. And
cool.
I just
kiss
to
ass.
Say thanks to Gabe for doing that.
Kiss ass, Gabe.
Why is he kissing?
He doesn't need to kiss our ass.
Kiss
yeah. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, it's reverse. We should.
So thank you, Gabe.
No, that is cool. Yes. Good. That was cool of you to do, Gabe. Sal didn't ask me.
Well, you live right here.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted people outside of
Gingerbread's
Illinois.
At my house playing my
hey,
PS4
Scotty.
Right now.
Besides, I don't know if I could trust you telling stories to fucking
to your daughter.
Olds.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Man, the Gingerbread Man, we came to my house.
He
and we
sucked
got
my
drunk
dick
and snorted coke off a horse.
I was at a whore house.
Scotty's looking at his computer like, you know, I only swore twice in this story.
She can deal with it.
I'm going to change this fuck to freaking.
To effing.
Effing, yeah.
No, I only sent it to people outside of the state of Illinois.
That's good.
Because I wanted to.
That is cool.
So check out The Crooked Man at Zooter.com.
Yes.
And vote. I think you can vote for it.
Yes, you can vote for it.
Voting thing.
And the winners get a sort of contract thingy. So yeah, he's a great artist, so.
And another listener of the show that has some stuff out there that you should check out.
And a guest. We've talked to him before, too.
Oh, with Gabe, yeah, on our Spider-Man
no
2.
No Shane.
Yes, because he worked. He was a storyboard artist on Spider-Man 2.
The next
or
one.
Or 3.
Shane White.
We're talking about Shane.
Yeah, Shane. Have we had Jesus.
Yes.
Have we talked
keep
to
up, people.
At the convention
we
talked to.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Shane White is the artist of The Overman, which just came out this past week.
It's very good.
It looks really good. I haven't read it, but it looks really good.
It was cool. I read it, and it was very good, actually.
Cool.
I really enjoyed
very good,
it.
Very
the
good.
Art was really... I liked how
Shane's very good.
The technology all looked in the future.
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird and odd. So go check out The Overman.
Mm. Cool.
Tim Freaky Tiki from the forum sent us a package this week.
It's a human
with some,
heart.
Actually, let me grab it.
It was a human heart with two issues of Simon Dark stuff inside of it.
There you go. He sent each one of us away.
Oh, so. How fantastic.
Wow,
there you go,
this is so
Scotty.
Very gay.
I'm going to put mine on.
Thank you, Freaky Tiki.
So he sent us, some lights. And he also sent us the first two issues of Simon Dark. And not because he knows any of the creators.
DC
or,
already sent us those.
he is a big fan of the Simon Dark series that is on issue 2 from DC. It is a Steve Niles written series that takes place
in
Gotham. Doesn't really have anything to do with Batman, but it's a it's kind of like The Crow in Gotham City kind of.
Just sent us comic books.
Yeah,
that he didn't have anything to do with.
No,
he just
likes
really,
it
really likes it.
He doesn't think
which
that,
is commendable.
He doesn't
That's
think that
commendable.
People have been talking about the comic enough. He really enjoys it,
look
and he's trying to promote it.
You can keep the fucking lays to yourself, but that's cool with the comics.
Yeah. You want people to like something? Just
so I already have the first two issues. Any of us that don't have them, go ahead and take them.
I have.
I don't do single issues even when they're free.
I know you drop those like
Tom.
He'll pay double for the trip. Rather than to get
single issues. All right, so Tom, those are yours.
All right,
but it does look very cool. I will buy the trade when it comes out.
It is cool.
Thank you, Timothy Tiki Guy.
Tom will read these next week. We'll talk a little bit about
Simon
Dark.
Are they both the same? Different covers?
Is it? It's the first two issues, isn't it?
Oh, first two.
Yes.
Cool.
So there you go. So a little Simon Dark.
Good
we'll
job.
Talk about that in the future. Simon.
Thanks, Freaky.
Freaky.
Reminder for everyone, we are in our month of heroes.
Oh!
Where we're each Monday we're bringing you
a new
interview with someone that's involved with the Hero Initiative, whether they're a board member or a creator that's actively involved with them.
I'm a board member of this podcast.
Snap!
All right, so actually, we've been asking people to not necessarily make a huge donation. If it's $3
or $150, just do it.
Whatever. And
Hank,
actually, I got an email from Jim McLaughlin from the Hero Initiative this week, and he said they have seen a lot of $3, $5, and $9 donations coming in. So we know that we're making a difference there. So get in the holiday spirit. Give some cash.
Give till it hurts.
Yes. Merry motherfucking Christmas.
So there's a PayPal button on our homepage, so you can do that. It's really quick, it's easy, and it's for a great cause.
So. Cool.
All right.
All right.
And remember, you can go to aroundcomics.com and download our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you in the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
And even post it on an aircraft carrier.
Yes.
We haven't had anybody
pick up the LCS Challenge in a while.
Yeah.
Somebody's slacking out there. You know, maybe Brian, we need to offer free shit.
Brian's not on the Abraham Lincoln anymore.
He's not?
No, he...
Deployed in...
Somewhere else. They moved him. I got an email from him, so he's not on the Abraham Lincoln, so he's spreading the good word in some other area of the military.
He's in space.
He's in space.
He was mutated.
When you leave iTunes reviews, Chris will masturbate while crying. So go do that.
You know what happens? It's tears of joy, though.
Wait a second. You know what happens? That, like, that's conditional.
What? No, no.
Like, you, there's another way?
I guess he does do it all the time, but he cries a little harder of... No, it's joy when you leave an iTunes review.
Not of
shame. He's just crying out
disappointment.
Of... Complete disappointment without iTunes reviews.
Well, you know, I'm spent after this week. You know what happened?
Oh, God.
He tricked everyone into giving tons of reviews. Yeah. Nice that was a nice play.
He's chafed and out of tears.
We eclipsed
the... Did we hit 200?
202.
Oh, joy. And almost all of them good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I like reading the old ones.
The old ones?
Yeah, they're funny.
So thanks to Cajun Bliss, Scott,
we should be good.
Sutherland, Freaky Tiki, Cammy Knoxville, Comic68, and Mike Ortiz.
I didn't know.
Hey, you know what? Thanks for...
Real
they're
names.
Fucking listening because they're putting the real
names.
Goddamn names. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bliss.
Except Freaky Tiki and Comic 68. You're fucking up the program.
Mr. Bliss?
But Freaky Tiki.
I mean, Freaky Tiki,
free
you're
comics.
Cool because you sent free comics. So.
And Lays.
Just get with the program on that side of things.
All right.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. You can, if we did pique your interest on Point Blank, you can still pick that up there. And now you can grab We 3 and...
InStockTrades.com is your new best friend because this copy doesn't match We 3. So,
pick it up. It'll
but you can still pick up Point Blank.
Oh, yeah. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection
just
Point Blank
it,
to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $9.72. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. And remember, all orders over $50 ship for free.
So that's been a month of heroes. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us oh so much enjoyment and conversation. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask for the gingerbread man.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Chris, Tom, Scotty, Mike Norton, and Crank.
And Hank. De-braced Hank.
The new de-braced, more mature looking Hank.
Yeah.
What a lovely smile. And thanks to Mark for hosting us as always.
Yeah.
I'm only reading this because it says us.
I know, I didn't change it.
I know,
but I figured it from last week. Remember about the Monday episodes? We do have a really.
Who we got
cool
Monday?
You're not spoiling it?
No.
Isn't it Denny O'Neill?
No, that was last Monday.
Goodbye.
The second half isn't.
We'll be
Monday?
Around comics.
No,
Sky
no,
Young.
Be after that.
I know who you're talking to. You supposed to talk to him this weekend?
Big.
Big Roy?
Big Roy.
You supposed to be talking to Roy Thomas this weekend? That's Saturday.
It's Jinx now.
Now I've got like a. Oh, okay.
It's the time.
Now I know when the show's coming out. I'm in the weird thing.
Goodbye.
Time.
Goodbye.
Flux.
Time flux.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fucks with everybody.
Tom, this is you in the past.
Everyone have a fantastic week.
Take it easy.
And weekend.
We'll be back again someday.
In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around comics.
Listening in the background.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network. music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, baby, love you one more time.